Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers, hanging out with Brad Keltner and Kevin Dunn. We'll get into some college football discussion here in a second. But before we do that, Kevin Dunn's got a message for you.
You're the man. Got about an hour left. Get to Randall's, 3441 Lakeline Boulevard in Leander. And until 7 o'clock, we're going to be giving you a chance to win a $50 gift card to the co-op. All you got to do is go to the Coors Light Longhorn display. You're going to see it. You can't miss it. Take a picture in front of it. Upload it to Facebook or Twitter. Make sure you use the hashtag Longhorns Made to Chill. Longhorns Made to Chill. And that's going to be going on until 7 o'clock. You'll be registered for a $50 gift card to the co-op.
All right, guys.
Beautiful thing.
Can I play maybe my least favorite clip from Tom Herman's Monday press conference here?
Go please for do. It. Let's do it.
This does not rival the Sunday comments that we had following the TCU game.
Great Sunday practice.
I mean, that is in a league of its own.
That is.
With everything that's gone on surrounding the Texas football program over the last 3 weeks, to me that is far and away the most frustrating. Hearing about how great of a practice they had on Sunday after a loss. And then to come out the next week and to lose to your biggest rival and have all of your goals disappear because of it. It makes that comment look even more ridiculous.
It does.
It does. Worst thing, too, is that they actually apparently got unified and sung the Eyes of Texas on that Sunday. Something about Sunday compared to Saturday.
They actually
just to piss off
it.
Some of the old heads, too.
They won't do it on game day,
no,
though.
No, not game day.
Sunday.
They were unified.
They were awesome.
Some were kneeling, but they were together.
Unreal. So I'm going to play this. This is from Monday, and it was a long answer for Tom Herman. I mean, he rambled for about 4 minutes here. I'm not going to play 4 minutes of audio. I cut this down to about 45 seconds or so. The initial question was just sort of about the defense and if he feels like the defense and also his team as a whole is making some tangible improvements over the last couple of weeks. And here's part of what Tom Herman had to say. And I'll tell you why. And you guys could tell me if I'm overreacting or if I'm making too big of a deal out of this. But I want to play the quote and then give you all my thoughts on why this is a huge problem with this Texas football program right now. Here's Coach.
You know, so I think these guys are continuing to see the improvements that they're making. Obviously, the big one is the self-inflicted wounds. I think, you know, watching a little bit of football across the country, there's a lot of teams struggling with that right now. In our past two games, although we've lost, our opponent has actually had more penalties than we have. It feels like ours come at much worse opportunistic times than our opponents do. But the number of penalties is actually, we've been less than our opponent for 2 weeks in a row. So we have seen a lot of tangible differences, a lot of tangible improvements.
Well, I don't think I'm going to have to argue too hard because I saw both of you shake your head a couple of times during that cut from Tom Herman right there. But, I mean, how ridiculous is that? Right, I'll get to the overall large-scale macro thoughts about that comment and what it might mean in a second, but the fact that after two embarrassing losses, Tom Herman is treating the fact that he had fewer penalties than his opponents as a win on the scoreboard is ridiculous. And oh, by the way, Texas is the 70th most penalized team in college football. There's only 77 teams playing right now, so they're in the bottom 10 of the country in penalties. They lost both of the games that he's talking about. Man. They've had three straight games in which they've committed double-digit penalties, yet Tom Herman is telling us that, oh, we committed less penalties than our opponents, so that's a win. That's really good.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous, dude.
Yeah, when you go home and tell the kids and the wife that you're not going to have dinner this week and you're going to have to be moving out, but the neighbors are worse off. You see the Joneses, they're really struggling. It doesn't make it any better. Some of what he said is factual, but also, if like I just said, if you're both messing up so much, so your opponent and you, then you talking about it does you no good. It doesn't help you out at all. Just swallow that one, Rod. Swallow it. And the other thing, too, is when I heard it, you know, and I thought of, you're telling me there was even a better reason the Texas should have won. And you still couldn't figure it out with your opponent effing up that much.
Exactly.
I got two mess-up kids here. And how did you not beat that other one?
So they were less disciplined than you.
Yes.
And had to bench their starting quarterback. And you still couldn't beat them.
And you still couldn't beat them.
Just wanted to make sure. And had more turnover, right? Didn't Texas win the turnover margin?
They did.
They did, yeah.
Won the turnover margin, too. Yeah. So I'm with you. I think I'm like, I don't think this sounds as I know what he was trying to say. I get the thought process.
In fact, he's correct.
It did not come off very well.
No.
And BK, I know BK is upset about it. That's a great find, BK. This is what troubles me the most, right, as a former player. What do the players hear when they hear that from their coach, right? Their coach says, "Ah, man, the other team actually had more penalties than us, so we weren't that bad."
It's an excuse. Because you also talked about how it's everything is what's going on with the pandemic. Yeah, it's happening to everyone.
And also, you're right about that, too. Yes, he has. Dad, I've heard him say that, too. Like, well, actually, it's happening to everybody.
Dad, I got a 75, but we have a curve. Most people got Cs. I don't care.
Yeah. It's the standard. We've talked about how they can't play to a standard. And he now is justifying that. He is enabling this underachievement by saying, man, they had more penalties.
Hey, as long as they commit 12 penalties, we can commit 11. It's all good.
It's crazy, man. I'm worried about what the young people in that locker room, when they hear that, how that echoes in their consciousness. Like, coach said, we're okay.
Yeah.
Coach didn't, he wasn't upset.
He's not as mad as we think he may be.
That's crazy,
man. He needs to plead a little harder.
Yeah. And KD, you kind of alluded to my macro point that I'm about to make here about the problem with the culture of Texas Longhorn football, right? We've heard country club culture a lot over the past decade or so, right? That predates Tom Herman a little
bit. Cowboys or Longhorns?
Yes.
Both. Well done.
I'm sorry, I get mixed up.
No, these comments I'm about to make could apply to either the Cowboys or the Longhorns. But it also, to me, feels like there is a culture, or part of this culture is nurturing excuse makers.
Yes.
And I think we've heard so much of that from Tom Herman. Now, I believe there are differences between reasons and excuses. And, God, my whole childhood was trying to convince my dad that, no, it's not an excuse, it's a reason. Most of that time I kept to myself because I told him one time that, no, it's not an excuse, it's a reason, and it didn't go very well for childhood BK. So, like, I understand, like, it makes me mad, but there is some rationale, there is some logic in saying, hey, because of the pandemic, because of the truncated offseason, our tackling's not as good this year because we didn't get as many reps in. I know people don't want to hear that. They want the production to be better. It still should be better than it is, but I actually get the logic behind that comment from Tom Herman. But the excuses of, for a guy, first of all, who talks about a bunker mentality, we're only focused about what we're doing and not what's going on with any other team across the country, the fact that he's continually brought that up this year, about other teams are doing this and other teams are doing that. He's making excuses. He's also pointing the fingers at other people for his mistakes.
Yeah.
Right? A good coach would say, he wouldn't bring that up. He wouldn't bring up what other teams are doing.
Exactly,
he would just
say,
that's a problem that we need to fix.
Focus on us.
We need to solve these problems that we have right now. Mm-hmm. But he's pointing fingers. He's victim blaming. I have talked to some folks behind the scene. I'm not going to reveal too much here, but I know Tom Herman is putting his coaches and some of his players on blast to people outside of the program or recruits as well. He is, like, blaming other people for what's going on within his football program, even though he is in charge of his football program. So there's just a culture, it feels like, of nurturing excuse makers and allowing it to happen. I think it partially predates Tom Herman.
It does.
But I don't think Tom Herman has done anything to stop that as well.
Well, it can predate it, reasons we're hiring you at this spot is we need you to change that. I think it's well known now that behavior is not conducive to winning here, Rod. In fact, you've got to be aggressive in fighting that behavior even more so here than you do other places.
Yeah. No, BK, I think you made a great point about nurturing excuse makers. I like that. And you're right. I don't think I've put it as eloquently as you, but you're exactly right. And I've heard him do that. Like last two or three years, there are times I can recollect it in my head where he's nurturing excuse making around there. And I think ultimately, attitude, reflects leadership. And the truth is, and Mike Shanahan always told me this too, at the end of the day, that team is going to become a direct reflection of the head coach. And it's almost like how your children are reflections of your parenting. And you can say what you want, like, well, I didn't raise him to do that. Well, yeah, you did.
You didn't raise him not to do
that. You know what I'm saying? Like, whether it's fair or not, you all know it's true. Your kids are a direct reflection of you, all right? And football teams are a direct reflection of that head coach. And he had a chance to rebuild this thing from the ground up and top down. And the truth is, they're undisciplined. He's undisciplined as a coach. they're unorganized. He's a disorganized guy, it seems. He's overconfident, arrogant, and he has a lot of hubris, and his team is overconfident, arrogant, and full of hubris. They are Tom Herman, guys. Like, yeah. They are him in every aspect, and I think the flaws he has as a head coach are now directly reflected in his team. They are just becoming him, and unfortunately, I don't think we like what we see.
No, he takes bad angles in the hallway.
He probably does.
Yeah, he puts you on hold when you call. There's just a lot of
bad at making adjustments, you know, right. Third quarter, fourth quarter.
That's well put by both of y'all. It's frustrating. It gets back to the word, and I hate to just be hypercritical on one word, but for you to ever use this when talking about your football team, we were pleading to them?
Yeah.
What?
Oh, when talking about the self-discipline.
Yeah. Holding guys accountable.
What?
Huh? Pleading with them.
Okay. It's like, oh. That's that parent that is pleading with their kid.
Hey, amen. Going like, back to the analogy. Yep, you're right.
Yo, no. This needs to be flipped. This kid needs to be scared crapless of you right now.
You're in the grocery store on your knees begging the kid to put down the Cheerios, Timmy. Please. We have to go to the car. Like, no. You tell that kid.
Okay, I'll buy you five Reese's on the way out. And the kid's already bartering his dad, you know, to get candy on the way out. Yeah. No, you're the adult.
Agreed.
Yeah, I was just hoping when we heard those comments that you were talking about, KD, I was like hoping that was coach speak, but with some of the other stuff that has been said and some of the other stuff that's been going on in this program for the last 4 years, I'm not really sure that it was.
Pleading?
Yeah.
You might believe
it. Till they're blue in the face.
Pleading is what you do to your girlfriend when you know you messed up. That's pleading.
Yeah.
Tom Herman.
And you know you're
up.
In the wrong.
You're a problem solver. Go solve the problem.
Yeah.
You got 14 of the 32 penalties.
Don't tell
us
about the other problems with other programs, right? We don't care about that. You're not paid to talk about that. You're not paid to solve their problems. You're paid to solve the problems at the University of Texas.
Go figure it out.
Don't bring that stuff up. Stop pointing fingers. Stop making excuses. Stop blaming other people. Go figure it out.
Yeah.
Get the job done, coach, or you're going to be out of here. It's as simple as that.
You said the disorganized, too. One of the reasons they hired him was because Charlie was so disorganized. And we've all talked about, we elect our presidents like we hire our football coaches. And even in my lifetime, the football coaches at Texas, it's hilarious how you go from McWilliams, and then we need an offensive guy and a national guy, so you go Makovic. Makovic wasn't personable and couldn't recruit.
Yeah.
Well, we go to Mac Brown.
You're right.
Mac Brown, you know what? Mac wasn't an X's and O's type coach. We're going to go get a guy, a coordinator, and Charlie Strong. Mm-hmm. You always swing a little bit too far on that.
Great point.
And the fact that they tried to swing and missed on the organization, because it is a sloppy, disorganized team.
Special teams shows you that alone.
And he's got more of a hand in that this year than he has the other 3 years.
And they're worse?
And they're worse.
so I'm with you. I'm a loss for us. I'm just hoping the bye week, and that it wasn't all coach speak, BK, that we've been getting. But I think you're right, and that's another great example you just played. It could just be all BS. And they had 2 weeks, and they come out, and they got double-digit penalties again, and they come out, and they're averaging around. They had 44 missed tackles in the last 3 games. They come out, and they're right on pace to get close to 15 missed tackles again. Then we know they're doing the same old thing during the bye week.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything different. And what is the definition of insanity?
Doing the same thing over and over and expecting something different.
Come on, Mensa.
Yeah.
You got to change it up, man.
I mean, I know you're paying. We know you're paying the dudes.
No, come on, Mensa.
Rod, this would probably be a good Saturday just to make sure you have it all set up to have your drinks all lined up before you watch a Texas game.
Oh, that's right. And my drink is Bud Light. Bud Light is my drink of choice. Always will be my drink of choice, especially during those football occasions. Matter of fact, we'll be having our virtual watch party this weekend while we watch the Baylor game. Hopefully you're watching a winning product. And I'll be enjoying Bud Light while we have any virtual watch party. But you should always make sure you break out the Bud Light for any of those festive occasions, especially the football festivities. But all those sporting occasions, maybe you're just hanging out, relaxing with friends and family. Maybe you're just relaxing solo. Maybe you're just binge-watching your favorite program. Whatever it may be, remember, you can always find a good reason to break out the Bud Light. Turns good times into great times and the rest of the times into the best of times. That's why I love Bud Light, and you should too. All year round, Bud Light is America's beer of choice.
All right, guys, Texas and Baylor coming up on Saturday. I mean, what are you expecting to see from this Longhorn football team coming off a bye? Of course, the last time we saw them was the heartbreaking 4-overtime loss to Oklahoma. You know, on the surface, it kind of feels like, well, all of this team's preseason goals are kind of gone out the window right now, right? Making the college football playoff, winning the Big 12 championship.
Well, that one's gone.
Right. I guess technically winning the Big 12 championship is still on the table. Right?
You got to almost win out, basically. Yeah.
You no longer control your own destiny, though. You've got to win out, and you need some things to break your way around the league. But that was a very, very demoralizing loss for the Texas Longhorns. So it could be, hey, man, what do we really have to play for right now? You know, like all of our goals are kind of shattered at this point.
Or
it could
be, it's a big test.
Hey, we got embarrassed. We've been embarrassed the last couple of weeks. This is not good. This is a bad representation on not just the coaching staff or the program, but us as players as well. We want to fix this. So what are y'all what are y'all's expectations for the way Texas comes out this Saturday against Baylor?
I have no effing idea, Rod.
That's interesting. I think the offense is going to come out and try to start fast. I do believe that, you know, the media and the fans who've been yelling, and BK has been among the loudest, and I think he's been right on the money, that maybe you should try at this point to put the ball more in the hands of Sam Ellinger and the offense more in his hands and make sure he's comfortable in that offense. And he's been most comfortable this year in the two-minute mode, in the hurry-up mode. So try to replicate that.
Start off that way.
Away from the 15-point deficit or the two-touchdown deficit. Try to replicate that somewhere in the first quarter. And you don't have to do it the whole entire quarter, because I think Tom Herman he almost feels like he's running the air raid, and he gets ready to hyperventilate if he's going up tempo the whole time and spreading them out the whole time and passing a lot. He's like, oh man, I might as well just hire Graham Harrell, for God's sake. So he doesn't want to do that, because that's too far from the pro spread.
Well, I agree with that.
Yeah, exactly. But I think ultimately, like you said, the best running game for Texas is Sam Ellinger as a scrambler. So you just need to put him in a situation where he can drop back, remove a lot of the clutter from the offense, spread it out, let him drop back, go up tempo, let him control things, let him stay at the line of scrimmage, and let him scramble. That's your running game right now. And I think if they try to go back to traditional pro spread, I think they're going to be doing themselves a disservice, because Dave Aranda and Baylor, I'm telling you, I think they know how to defend Texas, because it ain't hard. Twists and stunts up front, play bump and run on the outside. That's it.
Yeah, do they have enough guys?
I
came into this year saying and thinking that they were going to have to pass to set up the run. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was going to be this drastic, and I also didn't know that the run we're talking about was actually going to be a pass play and a scramble play, as you accurately pointed out in Rod's Rant of the Day. You can get to HornFM.com 525 if you want to go back and listen to that. I didn't think it was going to be this much. Also, the ego, and as we've the word we've used, hubris, that is involved. Like the fact that you haven't made that change, the fact that they don't have a good realistic understanding of what their personnel is. And it started Tom Herman's first year, when I totally took it as coach speak when he talked about how good the offensive line is. The right side of your line's garbage right now. In fact, the four other guys outside of Cosme have been garbage. Understand that. Understand you don't have that good of wideouts. You're going to have to go with the only thing that works, and right now, that is spreading and going.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and Dave Aranda does play a lot of bump and run coverage, right? I mean, obviously, TCU and Oklahoma had a ton of success against the Texas wideouts playing bump and run, but that's not going to be out of character for Dave Aranda. He's going to be very, very comfortable doing that, which is not good.
Luckily, this year, he won't have Derek Stingley while he's doing
right.
it.
Right.
But as we saw with Oklahoma, you don't need Derek Stingley.
Not against this wideout group, you don't. And that'll be interesting. I think you're going to have more concepts, more cheat codes to help these wide receivers. So I think you're going to see probably more bunch formations, and you're going to see them put the receivers in motion a little bit more. I think you're going to see them put the tight ends on the outside, maybe have them deal with the physicality of the bump and run coverage, because Jared Wiley probably can deal with that. He's not going to slow down Jared Wiley. He's slow anyway. He's a tight end.
Right.
He's just trying to get open and use body position.
Yeah.
And that's how – listen, and it's a great stat by my man Jeff Howell. Let me check it right. They're 4th and 9 plus. You look at the Longhorns this year, 4th and 9 plus. They are
3rd and 9. Okay.
3rd and 9 plus. They're 4 of 23 on 3rd and 9 plus. And two of those are Jared Wiley receptions.
Yeah, little digs where he used his body. It didn't matter if he's fast.
He's just big bodying people. So this is another example that, you can use him in a different way on the outside, but also free up your wide receivers on the inside.
Yeah. Everything you said, you're right, and should have been done starting in week 2.
No doubt. There's some Texas football conversation. The Longhorns and the Baylor Bears coming up Saturday at 2:30. We'll, of course, have that game for you here on the Horn. Coming up next, we've got the BK Lounge here on the Triple Option with RBKD. We're bringing back an old bit from the midday program. It's called BK Investigates. And today, we take a deep dive into the life and times of one Jeffrey Ross Toobin the First. Up next.
Fourth and five, the national championship on the line right here.
Oh, the band is out on the field.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
I don't believe what I just saw.
Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Chalmers for the tie.
Got it.
In 2 seconds.
Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
Oh, wow. In your life have you seen anything like that?
You believe in miracles? Yes.
Now, it's time to step inside the BK Lounge. Here's your host.
Who the hell is
Brad Kellner?
Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you. I know what you want. You know I got it, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the BK Lounge. October 21st, 20 and 20 edition of the Lounge. Alongside Kevin Dunn and Rod Babers, I'm BK Brad Kellner, and this edition of the BK Lounge is brought to you by Audio Visual Consultations. Give them a call, 255-8678, to get the home TV setup of your dreams. Gentlemen, for today's BK Lounge, we are bringing back an old bit from the midday program titled BK Investigates, and we've got ourselves a very fancy sounder to start us off.
The following presentation features life-altering information that, if ignored, may lead to serious consequences or even death. It's time for another edition of BK Investigates.
Listen to the voicemail.
Nice.
Yeah. Make sure you're paying attention, otherwise die. Probably going to die either way.
He's the one liable on that one, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That doesn't fall on me. We're going to take a deep dive into the life and times of Jeffrey Ross Toobin. And you guys know why this guy's name has been in the news this week, but a quick refresher. Jeffrey Toobin, CNN's chief legal analyst and a renowned reporter for The New Yorker, has been sidelined at a very pivotal moment in the run-up to the presidential election. The reason? He exposed himself during a Zoom call with colleagues in what he says was an accident. Not only did he expose himself, but he allegedly started to pleasure himself as well. I believe our own Elaine Benes can give proper explanation over what happened on that call.
How shall I put this?
Well, just put it.
He took it out.
He what?
He took it out.
He took what out?
It.
He took it out?
Yes, sirree, Bob.
Yes, sir.
Sometimes I need to breathe.
Yeah,
I mean, George Kramer, said, wasn't that Kramer's line?
Mm-hmm. I think George's line was the best when he was like, man, I also put so much thought and effort into getting her clothes off. Never thought about taking mine off.
That is an all-time great scene, an all-time great episode. But that's the explanation right there. The New Yorker said that it had suspended Toobin following the incident and that it was investigating the matter. Vice reported that suspension on Monday, so that's when we all found out about it. A spokesperson for CNN said Jeff Toobin has asked for some time off while he deals with a personal issue, which we have granted. Neither news outlet said how long Toobin would be out.
And so that was the New Yorker that he works for that was actually the Zoom stuff, I believe, right? Not CNN. So he had to go to CNN, his other company, and be like,
this is what happened.
Had a bad. Can I get some time off?
Yeah.
Ooh.
It was his decision.
Right.
Toobin's apology, released in a statement, yesterday, quote, I made an embarrassingly stupid mistake believing I was off camera. I apologize to my wife, family, friends, and coworkers. I believed I was not visible on Zoom. I thought no one on the Zoom call could see me. I thought I had muted the Zoom video, end quote. Yeah. Muted the Zoom video.
So you were still on the, you still admitted you were on the Zoom call, though?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So he was.
Oh, he admits it.
He admits,
he admits
doing
that
it
happened.
Call.
Yeah.
Because
it's his word against a bunch of other people who are on the Zoom call, so I don't think he's winning that one.
And then apparently the camera went down a little bit. He lowered the camera. Let me get that right. He lowered the camera accidentally when he was taking another phone call, and that's when people could really.
Yeah.
Oh, because at first it was up on his face.
Yeah.
Like it's the upper torso.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then it went down.
So this thing has taken off.
No pun intended.
Yeah, the hashtag MeTubin has become a thing.
MeTubin.
I would have preferred Jeffing off, but I don't make the rules here.
Oh, come on.
So I like Jeffing off more.
A bit of a background, guys.
MeTubin's pretty good.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, they're two great choices to pick from right there.
This guy's a Harvard law guy.
Mm-hmm. So a bit of a background. Right, how he got his start and became relevant. Yeah, he went to Harvard Law, but he began freelancing for the New Republic while a law student. After passing the bar, he worked as a law clerk to a federal judge and then as an associate counsel for independent counsel Lawrence Walsh during the Iran-Contra affair.
Okay, yeah.
And also Oliver North's criminal trial.
Man,
he next served as an assistant U.S. attorney in Brooklyn. After 3 years as an assistant U.S. attorney, he resigned from the U.S. attorney's office in Brooklyn and abandoned the practice of law. He then started working at The New Yorker in 1993 and became a television legal analyst for ABC in 1996. So that's kind of how he got started with The New Yorker and with doing TV legal analysis.
Didn't he also do some stuff with OJ?
He wrote a book on it, and I think he covered that,
didn't he?
Perfect segue right here.
All right,
You've done your research.
No,
did you see my notes?
No, I didn't.
They were on the printer for like an hour.
Taking your lounge
It's all good. These are good segues. So he has provided some legal analysis on many high-profile cases. We'll get to those in a second, but that's how he got to where he got. And everyone and their mother has seemingly given their thoughts on this story, including O.J. Simpson. I'm glad you brought it up.
No,
because
he posted
a video to his Twitter account on Monday after this story dropped. Here's what he said.
Damn, Jeffrey Toobin. At least Pee-wee Herman was in an X-rated movie theater. I'm just saying.
That was the video O.J. Simpson.
Unbelievable.
That is great.
Posted to his Twitter account on Monday. Now, why is this so funny? Well, O.J. calling out anyone for inappropriate behavior is always funny.
That is ironic.
Because, you know, he killed two people.
Allegedly.
He killed two people. But also, do you guys remember the TV series, The People versus O.J. Simpson?
Yes.
That came out in 2016.
Yeah.
That thing was massive. It won 9 Emmys. Everybody was talking about it. Everybody was watching it when it came out. That series was based on the book you were talking about, the book that Jeffrey Toobin wrote chronicling the O.J. Simpson murder case.
Okay.
Toobin also played a role in the case itself, guys. In 1994, Toobin broke the story in The New Yorker that the legal team for O.J. Simpson's criminal trial planned to accuse Mark Furman, the LAPD detective who was on the case, of planting evidence. It was Toobin who actually broke the story that was going to happen in the real trial. So there's some bad blood, no pun intended, between O.J. Simpson and Jeffrey Toobin. So O.J. had to have loved this story. But it wasn't just O.J. Toobin provided an analysis of, I'm going to make sure I say it that way, of Michael Jackson's 2005 child molestation trial, the O.J. Simpson civil case, which came a few years after the criminal case, and also Kenneth Starr's investigation of President Clinton back in the day. So this guy's been involved in a lot of things. Now, this incident, a lot of scandals. Now, this incident, another scandal, is not really a one-off for Jeffrey Toobin. Now, he hasn't done anything on a Zoom call before, but in terms of callous behavior, he is far from a first-time offender, gentlemen, and here's where this gets good.
Mm-mm.
The following information is available to the public, and some of it was tweeted out by former CNN digital producer Steve Krakauer back in 2018. So they used to work together at CNN. Jeffrey Toobin took the proverbial oath and was married in 1986 to his still current wife, Amy McIntosh, who invented the PC.
No. This is all, I know where you're going. This is all true. That's not.
No, yeah. Right. Yeah, okay. That's not true. That's not true. It didn't take long, though, for Jeffrey Toobin to break the oath. The dude has apparently been called the Tiger Woods of legal journalism.
What?
Because he shares Tiger's wandering eye and weakness for women. By the mid-1990s, Toobin was aggressively hitting on women using disgusting, shockingly sexual come-on lines. According to one of the women, Toobin tried to force his way into her hotel room, telling her, "You know you want it."
What?
And then he left several sick messages on her voicemail after she rejected his advances. He also apparently enjoys, according to multiple sources, New York sex clubs, and multiple women have reported on his sexual fetishes, which I can't really get into on the air.
Hey, that's personal. Nothing wrong with that. But him forcing himself on women, that's effed up.
Right.
Just know if you go to his
freaky.
House.
That's freaky.
If you
freaky,
go to his house, you know, don't use the back door if you catch my drift.
Okay. Odell Beckham Jr.?
I didn't catch my drift.
Odell
either.
Beckham?
No.
I was kind of going then.
Nah, he just, you know,
I got
that
you.
Area.
I get
that vicinity.
Hey, and also, if you're working with him and your daughter is there, be careful.
Yeah. So around 2000, another perfect segue. Unbelievable.
Disgusting.
Toobin began an adulterous relationship with a woman 13 years his junior, a Yale lawyer by the name of Casey Greenfield.
It's legal.
Above. Oh, that was the picture. I copied and pasted that. the daughter, so Casey Greenfield was the daughter of Toobin's former CNN colleague, Jeff Greenfield. Their affair lasted nearly a decade. Eventually, Toobin had actually told Casey he was going to leave his wife, McIntosh, for her, but by then she had began to distrust him, suspecting he had several other mistresses. In 2008, Greenfield, the mistress, became pregnant, and when she told Toobin the news, he offered her money if she'd have an abortion, according to a source. He also allegedly offered to pay for her to have another child later via a sperm donor as well. When Casey wouldn't have an abortion, Jeff told her she was going to regret it and that she shouldn't expect any help from him. Greenfield underwent a risky DNA test while she was pregnant, but Toobin didn't provide his sample and stopped talking to her, according to sources. On the day she gave birth, Greenfield emailed Toobin inviting him to meet his son. A source says Toobin didn't reply. Ultimately, he cooperated with the DNA test that proved he was the kid's dad.
What a dirtbag.
And that year, a Manhattan family court judge ordered him to pay child support. He refused to pay the full amount, but when Greenfield's lawyer threatened to notify his employers and garnish his wages, Toobin then paid up.
Yeah, it's child support. You can't avoid paying for your kids.
Yeah. You're a Harvard lawyer.
Thought you would have known that.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So a couple other quick stories. It's more than just that. In 2010, he was accused of whispering, quote-unquote, disgusting things to a prominent woman before following her to her hotel room. So that happened multiple times. In 2015, he was accused of exploiting a woman's story for his own financial gain. Patty Hearst, does that name do anything for y'all?
Yeah, that name is
kidnapped
familiar.
And brainwashed by the Symbionese Liberation Army.
That's a great story.
That story
alone is
freaking
crazy.
Berkeley area, we mentioned earlier, I believe, but she was an heiress.
She's an heiress,
right? And she ended up, she didn't want to come back.
No. And he wrote a story that came out in 2016. It was a New York Times bestseller, but she didn't want that story being out, and she called Toobin an emotional rapist. Was the words he exploited her to get that story out because he knew it was going to be a money maker. So it seems like this guy kind of sucks, guys.
I mean, the
Zoom incident feels like a fireable offense, and if you combine that with all the other incidents and allegations this guy has dealt with over his career, it really feels like a fireable offense. But as of now, he is just on leave. And I saw a tweet from a blue check yesterday that said that Jeffrey Toobin will probably return to the network after his scandal dies down because he's too valuable of a commodity for CNN to let go.
I mean, I watch CNN, and I've seen him on there, and I thought he does an okay job.
I agree.
But
he's not, I'm with you.
Well, the one thing, too, if you've got that position, because a lot of times you are the pharmacist. You're standing above people and looking down on them because you're a lawyer. And so you're talking about something. There's the reason you're on TV right now. Someone got in trouble or could be in trouble.
Yeah.
And you've got to give a little bit of a parental, hey, this is what's going on. He can't do that, especially BK did a brilliant job there of really kind of illustrating who this guy's been. They've known this for 20, 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, these stories date back to the 90s.
And by the way, what he did with the Zoom call was, of everything you pointed out there,
that's the least of their worries.
Right. And that felt like a fireable offense in itself, right? And then you combine that with all the other
stuff. A lot of those things, though, were before, unfortunately, and I hate to even say this, it sounds disgusting,
before
the Me Too movement, where people actually now were made aware of these types of issues happening and people abusing their power to this extent. And also, I'll say this about him. It's crazy to say it. People in Hollywood and even on the news are obsessed with Q scores. So even in Fox News, right, there's people that had all these allegations against them. But as long as the public likes you, as long as you've got a Q score that's positive,
Q ratings up,
a Q rating, then they'll keep you. Even if you got stuff in your past and bags, you're like, you know what, the public likes them. That means we can sell them to advertisers, so we keep them. Now, his Q score may drop because everybody knows about all of his shady baggage, so maybe they'll drop him. But right now, America likes him. And it's hard to get people with a personality on TV who also know their stuff. So that's why he survived. But I'm with you. That guy's got to go.
It could be an apples to oranges comparison. here, but remember Louis C.K. a couple years ago? Allegations of him pleasuring himself in front of coworkers came out and everybody canceled that dude.
Right.
Now with this guy, it's like it's becoming kind of a joke and people are excusing the behavior and it seems like he's going to be back to work in a couple of weeks.
That's a great – I haven't seen Louis C.K. yet. I think he's still canceled.
He's done a couple things, but it's nothing to where he was. I mean, yeah.
And I say he shouldn't be.
Effectively, he's canceled.
And I say he shouldn't be, by the way. Both of them probably need to be canceled and done.
His wife. So just looking at some of this stuff, I mean, his wife dealing with the I mean, you can imagine how many affairs this guy had. Look, if you're married out there, and I don't want to hear the whole swinger thing. If you're married and you're running around on your spouse, you suck at life. And also, you're probably the type of person who will virtue signal and talk about all the virtues you believe in about being a family man and core values. He reeks of that. Just get a damn divorce. And that poor woman, you can imagine all the stuff she's been going through.
Too, right?
The kids, he's got two kids, and now they've got a stepbrother or stepsister that he's not being a dad to.
Oftentimes these are arrangements. It's you know, I mean,
yeah.
Remember,
oh, yeah. Business arrangement.
Yeah, what's again? Wiener. Remember Wiener, the
Anthony
guy?
Anthony Wiener.
Anthony Wiener. Mm. Yeah,
who's definitely a sex
whose
addict.
His wife was working with the Clintons and everything. Like,
and the Clintons had their own little business relationship.
These people have arrangements so that you help me get to my status in life and I'll help you.
Yeah.
Right.
And we don't really care about love or relationships.
Yeah.
So.
No, I never really bought Bill and Hillary and I'll pay it back on the other side. Not really buying the
Melania and Trump. Oh, yeah. That's an arranged sham, too.
Of course it is.
They're all shams.
Mail order Russian bride.
You can go back to, like, Eisenhower. They were all shams. Yeah, FDR. FDR, the sham, too. Come on.
Hashtag sham, too movement. Unreal. So there you go. A BK Investigates edition of the BK Lounge talking Jeffrey Ross Toobin, the first, hopefully the last of his name.
Is he tried?
As well. Unfortunately, he is tried.
You got some bad ones, too.
Yeah.
You're like everyone else.
Yeah, we got plenty
of them. We all do.
We got plenty of them.
Not
all
the
right.
Catholics, though.
We'll tell you that. We'll tell you what's on tap up next.
Pop a top again.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash you?
Oh, yeah. I've been known to drink a beer or two.
I think a man working outdoors feels more like a man if you can have a bottle of suds. It's only my opinion. Sir,
I got beer.
I got bottled breast milk.
Why don't we start with the beer?
Okay.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Wait, it's already 5 o'clock here. It's time for What's on Tap.
How about a nice cool drink?
That's really
man,
good.
That's good. That is.
Pop a top again.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time to wrap it up and put it in the oven. Before we do that, my man KD's got another good message for you.
Thanks to the great people at Miller Coors. They're awesome people. They've been hooking up our listeners all year long. We'll continue to do that. Still got a little time left. Get to the Randalls in Leander, 3441 Lakeline Boulevard. Look at the Coors Light Longhorn display. Take a picture in front of it. Upload it to Facebook or Twitter. Use the hashtag. Got to use the hashtag Longhorns. Made to chill. Longhorns made to chill. And you can be registered for a $50 gift card to the UT Co-op. We all want that. All right, buddy.
Sweet.
What do we got here tonight?
World Series? Is that what's on tap?
That's what's on tap.
Yeah, baby.
And pitching-wise, this should set up well for the Devil Rays because they've got Snell going. One thing I'll say, though, is that I know Kershaw gave them six. The fact that they got some separation there, they didn't have to bring in any of their high leverage arms. So I think they kind of got caught back up a little bit kind of with where their bullpen is, and that's advantage Dodgers.
So who are you going with tonight?
I'm going to go Tampa Bay tonight. I think they make it 1-1. I'm still taking the Dodgers in the series, and I was thinking more 7 yesterday, and I know what you were hinting at a little bit. They've got a lot of momentum, and now that this lineup's clicking, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I'm worried. I hate to go overreaction radio guy. But I feel like
sweep
this thing, I'm thinking like 5.
Okay.
Almost a sweep.
Yeah.
Semi-sweep.
And I'm thinking the Dodgers take care of business tonight, which would be a huge blow to Tampa Bay. Right? Dude. I mean, going down 2-0, obviously. I don't need to explain that. But with the pitching advantage they have tonight, if you lose this one, if you lose against playoff Kershaw and Tony Gonsolin, who's got like an ERA close to 10 in this postseason, with your two best pitchers, or two of your three best pitchers.
No,
I guess Morton hasn't gone yet. He's probably your best. But two really, really good arms. then you're in a lot of trouble.
Bad for Major League Baseball, too, if Dodgers go up 2-0 because the ratings for Game 1 were the lowest ratings, I think, in the history of Major League Baseball in the World Series. So you go 2-0, then everybody will lose interest. Even the few people that are watching, nobody's going to be watching the World Series, and, guys, that's disastrous. So they got to keep it competitive, just try to keep some eyeballs on the set. Yeah.
That is an excellent point, and that also happened with the NBA Finals. I don't know if you guys saw Game 7 of the Braves-Dodgers outdrew a couple of the NBA Finals games, and that's pretty much the reason why. And that can obviously easily happen to baseball. Okay, so we'll recap that tomorrow, continue to get back into the NFL, start to take a little bit more of a look at what this weekend looks like for college football and also the NFL. Don't forget, we have Beat the Pluck tomorrow coming up at 5 o'clock. We've got still a lot of stuff going on. Under the Lights is coming up next. Then we've got Fight Night, and then we've got Sports Guys Talking Wrestling all the way till 11 o'clock. We've got local coverage. For Rod, for Brad, I'm Kevin. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Peace.